Hey, thanks for your time, Carl, on this Monday, the 27th. And we've got Dr. Robinson standing by. And we're going to say aloha or what?
Is it aloha, Dr. Robinson?
Well, that's the phrase. That's the welcome that they provide when you step off the plane and see the blue skies and blue water. And there's a whole special smell, if you will, to Hawaii.
It's an unforgettable smell, too. Yeah.
It's the coconut oil for those who are, you know, suntanning on the beach or protecting their skin from the bright sunshine. Anyway, good morning to, or for me, late night for me out here in Honolulu. But I appreciate the opportunity again to come and be a part of the conversation. The big school for all of America, and especially for Black America, the Carl Nelson Show.
Well, yes, let me ask you this, though, because with the time difference, and we were talking about this with the football games, I don't know if you're a football fan, but it doesn't necessarily mean football, but anything that's taking place stateside, how do you guys reconcile that? Because the difference is, I know it's in L.A., it was great for football. You wake up in the morning, it's football all day, all night, during the NFL season. College football.
You're absolutely right. That is, the late games, you don't have to worry about it because it's not so late. You know, you're not teetering on taking a nap in the middle of the game. But by the same token, you know, I went to school in Big Ten territory up in the Midwest, and some of their games on a Saturday, for example, are quite early, you know, 11 or 12 o'clock, a central time. And so that means what? Getting up here in Hawaii to watch them. I don't do it anymore, but I used to. I have to get up quite early to see the beginning of the game because it's 5 hours difference from the Midwest, 6 hours from where you all are on the East Coast.
Oh, wow. I guess you get acclimated to it after a while, though, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, you adjust. I'll say it this way. You know, Hawaii is Oahu, the main island here as far as population. About 1.1 of the 1.4 million people in Hawaii reside on the island of Oahu. And many of the people that work for the federal government, which means having to wake up early and get to work early so that they don't miss the entire day with their colleagues back on the East Coast side. So, yeah, you get acclimated, but it means being an early riser. And by the same token, if there's something very important going on late, you'll have to stay up late as well.
All right. Hold on, Phil, right there. We've got to step aside for a few moments. When we come back, let's talk some business, though. 17 minutes at the top of our family. Our guest is Dr. Brooks Robinson. You can find him out at blackeconomics.org. He's written a plan, a long-term strategic plan for Black America. Jump in on this conversation at 800-450-7876, and we'll take your phone calls next.
Now back to the Carl Nelson Show.
And Grand Rising family, thanks for waking up with us at 20 minutes after top of the hour with our guest, Dr. Brooks Robinson. Dr. Robinson, you can find him, his economic plan for Black America, or his strategic plan for Black America, is all at blackeconomics.org. Dr. Robinson, let's get permission from the ancestors first, so let's get into what we're going to discuss this morning.
Yeah, we definitely want to say thanks to that power, right? That power that wakes us up and gets us going early every morning. So that we can do what we're supposed to do. You know, sometimes we get stuck doing things that we don't really want to do or shouldn't do, but when we're doing what we're supposed to do, we can feel that force, that power of the great power, the great creator, and our ancestors pushing us from behind and making, as they say, our burdens easy, our yoke easy and the burden light, as they say. And anyway, yes, we always like to recognize the creator and our ancestors as we talk to people about what Black America should be doing, hopefully, to improve our situation.
Yeah, and things have changed now with what we see coming from the Trump administration. So this is a very important discussion we're going to have this morning. But you want to start off focusing on the leadership, Black America's leadership. So break it down for us. And first of all, though, do we have any Black leaders?
Well, I guess, well, that's a perfect question. Do we have any black leaders? I think there's no doubt that black Americans view certain personalities as leadership. And I will, though, take you from the flip side of that and say, you have to recognize, we all must recognize that we really have four black Americas, if you really want to look at it, right? You've got the super rich, and I guess the columnist from the Washington Post wrote a book about this back in about the middle 2010s, about 2014, 2015, Eugene Robinson. He wrote a book, and he says, hey, there are four black Americas, the super rich, then you got the middle class, and then you got the black poor, that's three, and then you have the black immigrant. You're talking about the people from Haiti, from Jamaica, and so on. They come up here. Well, you've got, and from Africa, don't forget the motherland. So we have four black Americas, and then the question becomes, who are the leaders for those four different strata of black Americans? And then there are some leaders that are just so powerful that they kind of represent all black America.
And who are those? That's my question. Those are the ones, you know, instead of the division. Who do you think represents black America as a whole?
I don't think there's anyone today that represents. I was speaking more of historically, of course, in the 1960s when you had people like Martin Luther King. Obviously, he was a leader of all of black America. Jesse Jackson, for a while, he played a very important role. He was very successful as running as a presidential candidate. I mean, he was surprisingly powerful. But coming up to today, who are the leaders? Well, people look at some religious leaders as being important, which might include some of the important pastors of the mega churches who have a wide reach, and you can kind of rattle off some names there. None so really, really powerful, but you do have the, you know, four or five major Christian denominations. And then on the flip side of that, you have Minister Louis Farrakhan. A lot of people, even though his membership might not be so great in size, his reach in terms of his voice and how he reaches people with his ability to speak to their hearts and their minds, some people will say that he's an important leader, even though he is, you know, getting much older now. And then you have the political leaders. Of course, Barack Obama represented black people. Some people say well, some say not really well. I had Kamala Harris in the last administration. And so it goes on and on. And then people who are in the military, you know, Colin Powell used to be a very important figure. I mean, the list goes on, and it just depends on what aspect of socioeconomic life that you're concerned with that might elicit someone saying, oh, look, yeah, this person or that person, that black American, they represent leadership in that area. But right now, I concur with you that it might be difficult to say there is one black leader that speaks for all black Americans. I don't think there's any such person today.
All right. 25 at the top of the hour. Is that a good thing, though, Doc? Instead of having focused on one person or one group or one ideology?
I think that's good for the following reason. And, oh, by the way, we did not mention Reverend Al in that earlier comment. A lot of people see him as an important voice for certain black Americans. You know, he came out of a certain tradition, and he represents a voice that many black Americans like to hear. But yes, it's important that we not focus all of our energy and our attention on one personality, because then you get locked in to a particular perspective, and if something happens to that leader, then you got to start all over again. And that's one of the biggest problems with black leadership. When Martin Luther King was assassinated, I mean, it took so long before it kind of sifted out, and a person began to identify a new person that represented the voice of a lot of black Americans. So yeah, it's probably good that we don't have just one black leader. Congressman Jeffries, right now, today, he's getting a lot of play, a lot of airplay because of his role as Minority Speaker of the House. And he probably will be viewed pretty soon as an important personality. Now, whether that's a good thing or not, depending on what he does. In other words, the Congressional Black Caucus can, from time to time, have leadership. Think of Adam Clayton Powell and others who have been in that kind of position, not as minority speaker or anything like that, but as an important congressman who voiced the opinions of a lot of Black Americans.
All right, let me ask you this question, though. And family just waking up, I guess, is Dr. Brooks Robinson. Dr. Brooks Robinson, you can find him at blackeconomics.org. He's written a long-term strategic plan for Black America. And we're talking about Black leadership this morning. Let me ask this. Can you clarify how Black American leadership's deference to our oppressors has produced or reinforced our socioeconomic conditions? Are they part of the problem, whoever these Black leaders, supposedly undefined Black leaders, are?
Oh, yeah. This is a critical point. And when we were thinking about this program today, we're talking about a piece that we released from blackeconomics.org, not this past weekend or this week, past weekend, but weekend before last. We released a piece called Permission Granted. And what we meant there in that piece, and we're very blessed to prepare it, is that our leadership, for a variety of reasons, historically, too many of those leaders, too few of those leaders didn't just say, this is what we want to do, we're going to do it, irrespective of what the opposers say. Most of the Black leaders have been very much acquiescent to the whims and the notions of the other side. And they have accepted, we believe, too often what the other side, that is white America, brought forward as solutions to our problems. And by so doing, they have deferred to white leadership and become secondary, very much secondary, in putting forward good, fresh ideas, good, fresh, powerful, and effective policies that can address our problems. And really, that's rolled us up into a situation where we're viewed quite negatively in many respects, one being that we don't take ownership enough of our own situation and then work to implement solutions for ourselves, as opposed to having a handout, sitting at Washington, at the steps of the Capitol building and at the White House saying, oh, we need resources for this and that and the other, as opposed to saying, this is what we want to do. We're going to do it irrespective of whether the people up on Capitol Hill or in the White House say that they're going to help us do it. We're going to get it done anyway. And I think the Million Man March, and 30 years ago, was an example of that, where someone said, we're going to do something, and it was done, irrespective of what Washington wanted. But it needs to go further, and I don't think we pushed forward on that part of what we could be doing for ourselves hard enough. If we had, I think we'd be much further along as far as our socioeconomic status.
29 minutes at the top there, family. Thanks for waking up with us on this Monday morning with our guest, Dr. Brooks Robinson, economist. And Dr. Robinson is talking about, he has a long-term strategic plan for Black America. You can find him, all this information is at blackeconomic.org. We mentioned about Black leadership, and some people have criticized the Congressional Black Caucus because some of the members of the caucus are octogenarians, I think that's how you say it. They're in their 80s, and especially one was in the news in D.C. over the weekend, a D.C. representative, Eleanor Holmes Norton, and she got scammed out of some money, and some people are telling her that she should step aside because I think she's maybe 88 or something like that. Your thoughts on that? Because and they are elderly white Congress and senators as well. I'm not sure if they've been nudged to get off the platform, but some people think it's time for some of these some of our elders to really step aside or pass the baton on to some younger people. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it makes sense in one respect. From a different perspective altogether, we cannot expect a government that represents 330-some million people and Black Americans representing about 50 million, a relatively small fraction, 12, 13, 14% of the total population, to believe that the government is going to swing everything our way just to help us become more effective and successful. I don't think we should focus so much on government at all. Even though I concur with the general opinion that it might be favorable to have some younger people in some of those positions, what we're focusing on, especially in the piece called Permission Granted, is kind of stiff-arming, in some sense, the government, not being so focused on the government and taking more focused on our own selves as a people, as communities, our areas of influence, pockets in some of the major urban areas, and beginning to plan and strategize and coming together and learn the key fundamental features of togetherness and trust so that we can make a plan. We can come to a decision, first of all, get a mechanism that enables us to come to a decision. Once we come to a decision, have enough faith and trust in each other that we're all going to do our part to implement that decision and then go forward with it and kind of push to the side, not completely out of sight, but and use what we're due as taxpaying Americans, but focus really on what we can do for ourselves.
All right, 28 away from the top there. I kind of like that, Dr. Ramson. So break it down for us. What can we do? What should be the first steps should we be taking to do that, to help ourselves instead of worrying about other folks?
Well, the first thing that we need to do, and the long-term strategic plan for Black America, that volume which is out there, people should go to the website to see it. I did not write it alone, just make that point. A group of grassroots people, great grassroots minds, got together and put that volume together. The website is just ltspsba.org. That's a long-term strategic plan for Black America. Of course, the other website that you mentioned today is our 20-year-old website called blackeconomics.org. But yeah, what should we be doing? The first step is to conceive in our minds and hearts, what do we want for ourselves? In other words, the most important thing in the universe is knowledge. And what you say as your tagline for your program, information is power. Well, information is nothing but knowledge. And then, of course, you all went further today to say it's the implementation of the information that's power. Well, knowledge is the most important thing. But the most powerful instrument in the universe is the mind. So we have to reconfigure the Black mind to get us to realize that epigenetically we've been affected in so many different ways. Adversely, let's get our mind straight first on who we are, what do we want to accomplish and achieve, in the foreseeable future. Get the mind right, focused on it, and say, yes, if we put our mind to it, we can get it done. And then you begin to sit down together, agree to trust each other, and form a strategic plan, use what is existing or modify it or create a new plan that is so powerful because people get together and agree on it, and then you proceed to implement it. You have to start with the mind. If you don't get the mind right, everything else goes away. Nothing else is possible. What do we say? Just in plain, simple, colloquial expression, wherever the head goes, the body follows. Correct? So,
correct. But having said that, at 25 away from the top of the hour, Dr. Robinson, what about the folks who don't want, we've got a bunch of folks who, Dr. Wilson would say, they like the way they are in the system of race and white supremacy. They're just looking for a better spot. They're not trying to overturn it. They're happy with what they are. They don't see what the vision, what you're talking about. How are you going to move those folks? How are you going to get them to understand? Because their mind is locked into one way, that this is it and we can't do any better and this is all we have, and I'm just trying to get a bigger biscuit and everything else, I'm cool. How do you reach those folks?
Well, first of all, you have to recognize that when you begin a process, it's not a snowball rolling down the side of a mountain, right? Like a snowball. No, it's not like that. It's like you get who you can. One of our members, Dr. Gail Frazier out of Chicago, she said many times in our meetings, in our discussions, she said her big mother, her great-grandmother, I think it was, used to say to her, you look around, you see what you got, you get it together, you take what you got and do what you can. So we get those people, Black Americans who are interested in seeing improvements in our well-being, we have to come together. Even if it's just 30 or 40%, starting off, 20, 30, 40%. And then you start making progress. And then others say, oh, by the way, yeah, I've been making progress. Now, let me look at that. Let me see if there's some benefit to me. Look, political scientists all already know That it's a very simple issue. People will not take any...
Right, and Dr. Robinson, hold that thought right there. We've got to step aside and get caught up with the latest news, traffic, and weather in our different cities. When we come back, I'll let you finish your thought, and Cliff in Connecticut has a question for you. Family, you too can join our conversation with Dr. Brooks Robinson. You can find his information at blackeconomics.org. We're talking about black leaders this morning. What are your thoughts? 800-450-7876 will get you in. We'll take all your phone calls after the news, traffic, and weather. What's next?
Now back to the Carl Nelson Show.
And Grand Rising family, thanks for waking up with us on this Monday morning. We're 17 minutes away from the top of the hour. Shout out to all our teachers getting ready to go to work this morning and take care of our young people. Hopefully you'll hear something on the radio you can share with our young people when you get to class this morning. Anyway, our guest is Dr. Brooks Robinson. Dr. Brooks Robinson and his group, they've written a plan, a long-term strategic plan for Black America. And this morning we're talking about Black leadership. 800-450-7876 is the number to call you'd like to speak to. And before we do that, though, let me just remind you, later this morning, we're going to speak with the founder of the Black Lawyers for Justice. That'll be Attorney Malik Shabazz. Before we hear from Attorney Malik, international journalist and activist Brother Obi will join us. And later this week, you're going to hear from futuristic researcher Brother Sadiqa Bakari, also the President General of the Universal African People's Organization. Brother Zaki Baroudi will be here. He's going to introduce us to two Cuban freedom fighters, and also economist Dr. Julianne Mal will join us as well. So if you're in Baltimore, make sure you keep your radio locked in real tight on 1010 WLB, or if you're in the DMV, we're on 1450 WOL. All right, Dr. Robinson, I'm going to let you finish your thought, then Cliff in Connecticut has a question or a comment for you.
Yeah, the only thing I wanted to say was, you go back to the 1960s, and a pretty famous economist, political scientist, Manzer Olson, he was at University of Maryland right there, and he wrote a book, The Logic of Collective Action. And that book says simply this, political or economic agents will take no action. That is, collective action, will not engage in such collective action. And that's what we're talking about here, Black people getting together and doing work that will, you know, benefit us all. People will not do that work unless they can be assured that the return that they receive, the benefits they receive, that those benefits are going to be greater than the cost they're going to incur to perform that work, which includes more than just, you know, the time and the energy and the effort. You know, they may be putting themselves in quite a position to take a strong stance, which might be antithetical to the status quo when it comes to looking at Black America becoming more independent, because that's just not the way it hasn't ever been that way, except for a few cases, and we know what has happened in those few cases where Black people were independent, went across against the grain, became very successful, talking about Wilmington, talking about Tulsa, talking about Rosewood. In those cases, people suffered because the opposition, the other side, say, you know, we won't countenance that. We're not going to let it happen. And so, when people engage in collective action, they face costs. They understand those costs, and they're not going to engage unless they're sure the benefits they're going to receive will exceed the costs that they will incur.
Got you. 14 away from the top. As I mentioned, Dr. Robinson, Cliff is calling us from Connecticut. He's online, too. Grand Rising, Cliff, you're on with Dr. Robinson.
Hey, Grand Rising, Brother Kyle, an excellent question in terms of who is the Black leadership. Maybe not push back, being disrespectful, but I want to say this, is that there is a leader amongst us that has given us the blueprint to survival, you know, in terms of how to eat, you know, how to live, what our political agenda should be, also to the point where he or the organization even influenced and instruct us not to take the vaccine. You know, so I don't know who or whatever individual or group has gone to that extent in order to help Black people to survive. So my question to you, who would fit that category with the description I just gave you?
Yeah, well, I know who you're talking about, and I think people who are awake today know who you're talking about.
Who is that person? I'm asking you to name that person.
Oh, that is the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. That's how he's referred to. Wait a minute. Okay, but don't forget the history, okay? Don't forget the history. The history is he's a student, and he says it up front, of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He's the man, in my view, the most important book for Black America of the 20th century was the book that the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad put together called Message to the Black Man. He meant black man and woman, boy and girl. But, yeah, it was a very powerful book, and he laid out the framework. Black Americans still don't yet recognize the power of what he did, but those who preceded him, like Noble Drew Ali and Marcus Garvey, they set the framework for him. So it's a continuous process of growth and development. But yes, Minister Louis Farrakhan, but there are other factions or groups within the Islamic tradition also doing important work, too. You can't just, you know, highlight Minister Louis Farrakhan. Go ahead.
Right, and I understand that, and thank you for sharing that, but I'm simply saying that we do have a leader, you know, and Brother Carl, also having you included, but we as black people do not want to recognize our potential black leaders, and we would rather be Americanized and value a political party, a party, or even Caucasian people as our leaders. That's what we do as grassroots black people. We don't have that. That's our culture. So it's our fault. We ignore our potential and very valuable leaders, in my opinion. Thanks for taking my call.
But Cliff, you didn't listen and hear what we said. We said that, as Mr. Nelson said, well, how do we get this done? How do we improve our situation? We said, well, the political side of it, you know, we may have to push that to the side, not fully into the background, because we are due the resources that come from government, because we do pay taxes. But that what we're talking about is not ignoring what the government is doing, but looking and inspecting, creating an inventory of our needs and seeing, you know, which needs are not being met, and not going to the government and say, oh, you got to help us do this. But we look at that situation and say, what can we do for ourselves? And so we're not saying that we got to look to only government and leadership coming from government. We can't just look to religious leadership either, because even those who really believe in religion know that there's no compulsion in religion. So everybody's not religious in the same way. So we have to kind of, Malcolm used to say this, he said, you know, put your religion aside, put your politics aside. The thing that we need to worry about is black nationalism and what can we do for ourselves to get the job done so that as we move further down the road, we are increasingly improving better and better positions in across the entire socioeconomic spectrum. That's what we should be trying to do in our view, and that's what the grassroots group that I've been working with, the Long-Term Strategic Plan for Black America, is trying to do, and this is what we've been writing about, you know, thankfully so and humbly so, for the last 20 years.
10 minutes away from the top. Yeah, the change, America's changed. Donald Trump, let's be straight up. Donald Trump has changed America. Is this a great opportunity for us now to change, to respond to with his changes? Do we need another Gary meeting, Dr. Robinson, where we come out and have a black agenda? Or how do we formulate some of these ideas that you have laid out in your plan? How do we make them put it into practice?
No, that's a very important point. and that convention in Gary was a powerful situation. But then you need to look at it and say, well, why wasn't there more follow-up? Same question asked after Million Man March. Why wasn't there more follow-up? I'm just going to say it this way, Mr. Nelson. We're going to have a kind of come-to-Jesus situation. That's the way some people say it. You know, come-to-Jesus meeting. That is, we're going to have a kind of crisis. It seems like we're going to have a kind of crisis situation that's going to force us to realize, as one of my siblings said, he says, we all we got, you know, because in the end, America's become so fragmented, every group, and there's so many now for themselves. They're not worried about the other ethnic group or the other racial group, now for themselves, and logically so. We forget the fundamental first law of nature, self-preservation. And so to even expect, you know, another group of people, another ethnicity, another race to look at us and favor us, start writing checks to us and saying, oh, by the way, I'm going to give you half of what I got. That just ain't, it's not going to happen. So once conditions get worse, you were talking about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He said, hey, you got to get people that are dissatisfied. People get dissatisfied, they'll begin to take action in their own hands. And when they do, if we come together in that situation, under those circumstances, truly interested in righting the ship, truly interested in writing a new history for ourselves going forward, then we'll come together in faith, we'll come together economically, we'll come together religiously, we'll come together politically, we'll come together educationally, in so many respects, and develop a plan, a strategic plan, work it, have faith in it, and just stick with it until we get the job done. But it may take, you know, some force, some unforeseen force right now that pushes us in that direction.
7 minutes away from the top of the hour, Dr. Brooks Robinson. So, Dr. Robinson, your thought on reparations. Should we eliminate that from the calculations to moving forward for that we need as an economic thrust, or should we just look at some other place that we need to generate funds to get our situation straight?
Well, yeah, we are due reparations. There's so many people in the United States who've already gotten reparations, okay? There are people around the world who have gotten reparations. The people who are bombing, you know, Gaza these days, you know, they're doing that because they got reparations to get a territory to start, you know, their own national government and system. They got organized, they got reparations, and they used it to build a nation, and now they're trying to make sure they defend themselves in such a way that they're never harmed again. And there's a certain logic to that. I'm not saying that it's right. I'm just saying that there's a logic to it. The bottom line is we should not eschew the idea of receiving reparations. We should continue to pursue it. The question that people should be asking is this. How in the world, in 2024, during the run-up to the election, all we could hear all across the nation was reparation, reparation, reparation. And once the political conventions began, you heard maybe one or two words spoken about reparations in both conventions, the one in Chicago and the one in Milwaukee. The reality is the political parties didn't give up, you know what, about reparations. It's not something they want to do, have any interest in providing to Black Americans. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't still pursue it. And why is there so much less noise, so much less talk about reparations after the election? We just don't have a strategic plan in place that everybody agrees with, so that things that are important, we go with the wind. We're the dust people, and we don't stick to the issues that are important to us. So to answer your question, we should not, just give up on reparations, but we should not let it stop us from doing what we need to do. You do what you, as I mentioned earlier, Dr. Frazier said, her grandmother, her great-grandmother used to say, you take, and Booker T. Washington said the same thing. Lift up, reach down with your buckets right where you are and begin to raise yourself up. And then if you're going to get some icing on the cake, you know, some extra flow from somewhere else later on, then you just blend it in and use it wisely. But don't let that, the absence of it right now, that is reparation, stop us from moving forward and making progress, the kind of progress that we can make when we get our minds right, get a plan, and get everybody on the same page wanting to move forward to improve our conditions.
All right. Hold that thought right there. We got to check the traffic and weather in our different cities. When we come back, though, because you mentioned the issue, the talk of reparations sort of fizzled out after the elections, the presidential elections that we had last year. So the question is, are we too invested in the Democratic Party? Should we be looking to other parties as well, other interest? And I want to get to your thoughts when we come back. Family, you too can join our conversation with Dr. Brooks Robinson. Reach out to us at 800-450-7876, and we'll take your phone calls after the traffic and weather together. That's next.
You're rocking with the most awesomest. The Carl Nelson Show.
You're rocking with the most awesomest.
Grand Rising family, thanks for starting your Monday with us. Our guest is Dr. Brooks Robinson. Dr. Brooks Robinson has part of a group that's put together a long-term strategic plan for Black America. You can find all that information at different websites. One is blackonomics.org, and he'll give you the other one before he leaves. But my question to Dr. Robinson, because we talked a lot about leadership and what we deserve and how we should, you know, craft our own plan going forward. This is what his group has been doing. If we made a mistake by putting our limiting ourselves to one political party, Dr. Robinson, should we spread it out, or should we just eschew politics and move on? And it doesn't matter, because it seems like either way we get the short end of the stick, either party. But your thoughts?
Well, there are many ways to answer that question, but they all point to one thing, and that is I'll start with Malcolm X. He said, you've got dogs, or you got wolves, and you got foxes. You remember that one, right? He was talking about the Republicans and the Democrats. He says, no matter how you look at it, they're all of the canine family. So that answer right there says basically, you know, you're going to deal with the same situation whether you're with the Democrats or the Republicans. And we should not forget, once upon a time, we were not primarily Democratic as a voting bloc. We were primarily Republican following Lincoln after his successful presidency, unfortunately his assassination. So that's one way of looking at it, that we should not put all the eggs in one basket, that we should be more diverse, just like in your investments. They say diversity is important. Diversification is important. I'll make the following two points that I think are important as well. In 2015, we wrote a short paper. We were blessed to write that paper on the blackeconomics.org website. It's called Why Not a Black Political Party? I think it's worth reading for those who might want to comprehend what we're trying to say. But let me add that let us also not forget there have been many efforts to create our own black political party. For example, the billionaire who has been just torn down in the courts. And I'm not an expert on the legalities of what happened, on why he was sentenced and all of that the way he was. But Sean Puffy Combs, what did he do back in about 2016, thereabouts? He gave money. He put his money where his mouth was. And he started trying to formulate what he called our own political party, our own black party. And that may in part be one of the reasons why he was attacked the way he was. Not that he did or did not do wrong or did wrong. That's not for me to even discuss. The point is, when you start trying to oppose the status quo, the system, you're gonna confront, some opposition. But he put money into trying to start a new party, a black political party. And if we use our vote wisely, strategically, we can optimize the outcome. The problem has not been that we didn't have, the ability to do it. But go back to about 2021, when the Democrats were in full bloom in both houses of Congress, and reparations was coming up. But the black caucus said, hey, no, we're not going to force the issue because we want to win the midterms. As opposed to saying, this is what black America needs, let's push it forward. No, they said, no, we'll go with the party leadership. So, yeah, we need to think more independently. This is what we've been talking about the whole program. Think more independently. Do things for ourselves the way we can. We cannot count on politics alone. We have to get together at the grassroots level and every other level and exploit the resources, all kinds of resources that we have, in a strategic plan that we all agree to, or most of us agree to, and are willing to work the plan to get things done that need to be done to improve our situation. Our politics is just one aspect of it. Economics very much at the center of it. And maybe even more important is the mental frame of mind, the mental frame of reference where we feel empowered, where we feel that we are due what we are due, and we just ain't going to take it no more. And when we get to that point, people agree on that, then I think we'll make some real progress.
All right, basically you're saying that we should have our own black agenda. and you've created a framework for a black agenda. People listening right now, how can they help? Because I'm sure you're open to modifications, because, you know, things change and people change. Or you get, it's like a chessboard. You got to keep moving stuff around. If people want to help you, Dr. Robinson, how can they reach you?
Well, you're talking about the long-term strategic plan for Black America. Once again, the website is LTSPFBA. It is the acronym for Long-Term Strategic Plan for Black America, and then .org. And once you go to that website, you'll see that you'll see the process that we went through to arrive at this plan. It is open to modification, and the grassroots organization, we call it an implementation team, and we are thankful to those who have worked diligently and tirelessly in many respects to bring what is there about. We're all sitting there waiting for you while we're working to come aboard and view the plan. Look at the executive summary, if nothing more. Consider it. Decide where you want to fit in. We're talking about 9 different areas of life that, you know, we need work in. And then just write to us. You'll see the contact information on the Contact Us page. Write to us, email us, and say that, want to volunteer, help Black America go forward. What little bit I can do or you can, we all have to start somewhere and decide we're going to make progress no matter what. When we get that mindset, again, working on the mind, then we'll make progress.
Gotcha. So Doc, give us the email address, how folks can reach you again.
Well, you can reach me specifically, and I'm the rapporteur. I'm serving as the rapporteur for the Long-Term Strategic Plan for Black America Implementation Team. My email address is just LTSPFBA, that's Long-Term Strategic Plan for Black America, .bbr@gmail.com. Otherwise, you can write to us at our website as well, blackeconomics@blackeconomics.org. Black Economics, one word, @blackeconomics.org. And you'll find some of the same content on both websites. The plan, for sure, on both websites and other works that we share across websites, we're just trying to get the information out so people can see what they can do to make things better for Black Americans. Because if we don't do it, I can assure you it ain't going to get done.
That is so true. That's why we have you on here to share the information with us this morning. But we want to thank you because what time is it out there in Honolulu?
Mr. Nelson, you just kind of extended my night, you know, just a little bit. It's 1 o'clock in the morning here, just
one
after
1 o'clock in the morning.
10 after 1. I think it's 10 after 7 your time, right?
Right. Oh, wow. Okay. Listen, we appreciate you getting up or staying up for us in Hawaii to share this information with us. And keep us in the loop, though, because you've got the plan. So what's next? Next time you come on, tell us what's next. What are the plan to implement the plan, if you will? Because I think that's the stage you're at, or you're still putting the finishing touches on the plan.
No, the plan is there. We just need people. We need people to come aboard and help us get the work done. We're doing what we can, but we need more people to help us move forward on all aspects of the 9 areas that we have established as focus points for doing work. We already have detailed expectations and detailed plans for all of those areas. We just need people. Come on, as responsible parties, we're calling them responsible parties. Become a responsible party. Take on the responsibility to work what you can and the work you can do, whether you're talking about economics or health or housing and community development or education or recreation, religion, and culture or social, whatever you want to work on. Find your niche, your expertise. Come aboard and help us get the job done. And we are thankful for all of those people who have spent all their energy and time helping get this website and the plan together. They're waiting for you to come aboard and help.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Robinson. Thank you for sharing your thoughts. And thank you for putting this plan into action for us. All right,
oh,
family.
Yes.
10 minutes at the top. Let's bring in Brother Obi now into the conversation. Grand Rising, Brother Obi, welcome back to the program.